peace. Welcome to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening, folks. First and foremost, can we give a big shout out to what we did yesterday? I was really excited, man. Yeah. That's right. Big shout out to that, man. Big shout out to my phenomenal production team, starting with the station manager, Ms. Mallory Pinker Pierre, Alex Blanc, my man Ty, what do you call him, Ty Dolla Sign, and my man Dre Day. Yes. Phenomenal job. And of course, I got to give a big shout out to legend, the icon herself, Ms. LaDawn Black. As we co-host, yes, host of In the Groove. We had the phenomenal opportunity to co-host and work together last night for the Universe Soul Circus. Yep, it was a lot of fun. I'm telling you, hilarious. Julius White, of course, our newsman here at WEAA. Dr. K Whitehead, yep, she stopped through illegally. I mean, it was just a lot of fun, man. It was a lot of fun last night. And, of course, our special guest, Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby, and music executive and Baltimore's native son, Mr. Kevin Lyles, came through as well. Just a lot of fun. But it was a phenomenal time out there at the Universe Soul Circus. And big shout-out to all of those who made the Universe Soul Circus such a great experience for so many families in Baltimore. Yep.
Nothing in this world that I like more than boats.
There it is. So that was a lot of fun, though. A lot of fun. Tonight, folks, we're going to have even more. I'm really looking forward to tonight's conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, we got some big things that are on the platter, but you know how we do, folks. You know how we do. Once we get going, it's going to be hard for this train to stop. But this is a conversation that I've actually been looking forward to. And as I've been reading up on it and just having conversations, everyone from my wife to my sisters and to, you know, a lot of different women, this conversation I truly, truly believe resonates with a lot of black women, which is the fact of this whole idea, this whole mythology of the quote-unquote, the strong black woman. The whole mythology behind it. And I think that if we have a real conversation about the impact of this myth, even in 2019, I think it opens up the door for us to have even more honest and fruitful conversations about the issues of mental health. There have been recent studies that have come out to say that black women are suffering more and more from depression, and they're not talking about it. Ladies, you're not talking about these things because of this narrative of the strong black woman, this myth. So tonight we're going to have a conversation in a few with our very special guest, Dr. Jasmine Abrams, who is a researcher and has done some extensive work on this whole idea, and to look at the impact of it on a mental health level. We got to look at it from a cultural level. I mean, this thing permeates into every level of a black woman's life, from her politics to her family life, even to her marriage and her dating life. I mean, it permeates her professional life, the career woman. It's so pervasive. And so I'm very, very excited to even have this conversation about this with Dr. Jasmine Abrams, who is an international behavioral research scientist. She's an educator and she's an entrepreneur. And talk about this. And ladies, I want to hear from you, of course. I'm going to be opening up the phone lines in a few moments to give you an opportunity to share your thoughts about this whole idea of the strong black woman. Like, you always got to be strong. And so let's give some context to this. the big context is that, you know, the strong black woman has been a thing that I think for far too long within our community, within the black community, has been really glorified. It has been on a pedestal. And I think, I mean, when you look at the ramifications of that type of mentality, that it comes at a great expense. And so now new research has indicated the belief that black women are naturally strong is in fact connected to higher levels of depressive symptoms. There was a recently released study published in the journal Sex Roles suggesting that self-silencing or self-sacrifice, long associated with being a strong black woman, i.e. holding the weight of the world for everyone else, is detrimental to the mental and oftentimes physical health of those who take on this identity and role. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Jasmine Abrams of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. She's an assistant professor there. But one of the things she's pointed out, and we're going to get some more details about this, is that she said, when we were conducting focus group discussions, many women mentioned being strong black women or looking up to strong black women in the forms of mothers, grandmothers, aunts, friends, celebrities, etc. She said, what struck me about the discussions was how women discussed embodying this role. It was simultaneously discussed as aspirational and overwhelming. Y'all hear me on that one? Here is a mythology, or here is an idea. I don't know if we can say it's a mythology. I mean, women, black women, you are strong women. But I tend to believe that we look at that as just the only element or quality of a woman, the strength. And that leads to other issues, especially about vulnerability. When a black woman feels like she can't be vulnerable. When a black woman is not able to meet the expectations of other folks. Suppose you are a black woman who really don't know what you're doing. If it comes to your profession, if it comes to your career, if it comes to your family life, suppose you just don't have it all together. Does that mean that you are not as strong as a black woman? So I wanted us to have this conversation, and I want to hear from you. We are broadcasting live on Facebook, so you can certainly post your comments at my Facebook page at Faraji Muhammad, as well as on our station's page, WEAA. And let's talk a little bit about this. Let's talk about this a little bit more, because even though it's Father's Day is coming up, right? Father's Day is coming up. Big shout out to all the fathers. Big shout out to the fathers. I'm going to say that. The fathers. Okay? There we go. Big shout out to all the fathers. But then, unfortunately, there are still plenty of households that don't have a father figure. And once again, black women have to fill in the gaps of being both the father and the mother. I even heard this, folks, y'all can, certainly talk about this. But I even have heard some women saying that they should receive Father's Day gifts because there's no male figure in the household. I don't know. It will be a cultural change. It will be a cultural shift. So I wanted to talk to us a little bit more about this. And there was a couple of other studies I want to bring up as well about this whole idea of self-silencing, that when you are going through traumatic experiences, when you are having a hard time to deal with things in life, when you really aren't at your strongest, when you really are not at your best, but you got to put on this air, you got to put on this facade that you can handle it all. There is some consequences to that. There's the old saying, fake it till you make it. And I've heard that for many times growing up and all of those things. And part of me says, but is that good? I understand the idea behind it, but is that good? And I think in 2019, modern 2019, as we're having all of these larger movements, whether you're talking about Me Too, Time's Up, whether we're talking about any movement where women are now really asserting their leadership, their power, I think the greatest movement that we all can gain from is the movement of being authentic and certainly a movement of being much more healthier than we have been over the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years. If we can't be authentic, if we can't be honest with ourselves, right, and being able to challenge those traditions, those norms, those ideas that have made us unhealthy, then what are we leaving for the next generation of girls, next generation of boys? So as we have this conversation, I want us to figure out, like, how do we get to a place of authenticity? How do we make sure that this is not just something that we talk about, but something that we can truly gravitate to, embrace, and essentially live out? Otherwise, this is just talk. This is just talk. Let's go to, and I'm going to open up the phone lines at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, and get your thoughts about this, about as we have this conversation in this whole, as we can have this discussion, the strong black woman. Let me hear from Donna from Baltimore. Thank you so much for checking in, Donna. What's your take on this?
Hi, Farhadi. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I didn't think I was going to come up so fast.
don't be doing that, Donna. It's always good to hear from you. I know this is a near and dear a discussion to your heart. You often talk about mental health when you have the opportunity, Donna.
Right.
So you know, give us some insight about what your thoughts are about this whole idea of being a strong black woman.
Well, I think society, and it didn't come from us. I think it came from our non-melanin people. They put that in our heads because, and why they did, I don't know. Because we are vulnerable as a people. I mean, we're not. We have the same issues that society has. We have depression. We have diseases. We suffer. Every ills that society has. We're not strong nor weak. We are strong and then we weak and we have all the other ills. Mm-hmm. But to put us as strong and then there's nothing else that affects us, it's not totally true. We do have, we suffer depression. We do have mental illness. We die more, even though breast cancer, for example, is low in our community, we still have the highest, we still die of it because we are in denial that it will kill us,
mm-hmm.
even though we have the lowest instance because we don't want to know about it. So, I mean, we have problems in our community as a women, but we go in denial, we whatever. I mean, so we do have issues, and we need to, and another issue is black women have a tendency to put everything on the family and forget about themselves.
Right, so, right. Oh, no, okay. Come on. You know what? I feel like that's primary. Like,
right.
it's either one or two things for me that I'm seeing, Donna, and correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like you see some black women who go hard in the paint for their profession, or they just go hard in the paint for their family.
Right.
At the expense of themselves. And I think that that's the wrong part of me. I want to say it because I know people may not feel this way, but I think that's wrong. Like, your family is important, your profession is important, but your sanity and your mental health is even more important.
And I say that to a lot of my friends, and I know all of them are dead.
Oh my goodness!
They've had families and everything, and they said, "Oh, the first people to come first are my family, whatever." And I'm like, "Yeah, and you have to pamper yourself too." And all of them died. They weren't even 55; they all dead.
Wow.
Because they put their family and everybody first. And I have one girlfriend, I love her dearly, and finally it sunk in, and she started putting herself first, and she is alive.
So how old is your girlfriend, if you don't mind me asking, Donna?
Mm-hmm.
How old is your girlfriend?
She's now in her 60s. She made it into her 60s, and I'm proud of her. But wow. All the rest of them did not. And they had that same ingrained, my family comes first and all the, and I'm like, yeah, but you got to come first too. And they all died of diseases that were curable. Breast cancer, hypertension, heart disease, you name it. And it was not necessary. And by the time it creeped up on them, they all succumbed to it, and it was too late. And it's not necessary. Mental illness is another issue, too. Some of them are faced, too, and they didn't recognize it. And then were the other health issues.
Mm-hmm.
I want to also tap on our brothers. I find that because of the adversities that our Black brothers have been facing, they're surviving more than our sisters, because more of our Black sisters are dying faster than our brothers. The brothers are surviving and persevering and raising our families, because our sisters are dying or can't raise their families, and our brothers are now becoming the new parents.
Mm.
So it's been a shift.
But see, isn't that something, though, Donna, because I feel like, that's not the story that's being told right now.
Right, that absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's not the story. Like, if you were to talk to, and maybe it might be a generational thing. So
I think it is. I think that you have some women
who say that you know, take the extreme role, some women who say, men ain't crap.
Right.
Men ain't nothing. You know what I mean? And therefore, they live by that mantra. Or you have the other end of the spectrum, where women are saying, you know what, men, it's not that men not crap, it's just that, you know, we are there to help them to meet certain roles and to help them to become better. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. And there's so much going on in our community, because there was a brother on Anthony McCartney's show, and he filled in for you, and he was like, I think it's the fourth caller, and he called it out. He said, "You sisters out there, you picking the wrong men, and then when you have sons, you're messing up the sons, and then the sons end up on the streets, and then next thing you know, your sons are dead, and then you're complaining." And so our sisters are picking wrong men. And then the women, or they're picking men who are not committed to them, so they end up single women with all these children so they're angry, and then the men abandon them, and then, you know, and then they abandon the children. So we have a lot of issues that are so multifold that we haven't sat down and really looked at not only ourselves, but how we are affecting the setup of how our community looks and our families. So when you look at when we were talking about the squeegees yesterday, squeegee kids, you see a squeegee child on the corner, I think our police commissioner needs to sit down and ask them, why are you here? Are you hungry? Did you have your dinner tonight? When is the last time you had your dinner? Because if you start asking them questions about when's the last time you had your dinner, how many dinners have you had in the last week, you will find out why they're on that corner.
Yeah.
And then if you instead arrest them, let's pick them up and then take them to the home and start bringing a social worker with them too.
Yeah.
And have the social worker start talking to the mother, because then you'll find out what's going on at home. We have to start. These kids are not on those corners by themselves. And where are the parents? Why aren't the mothers on the corners squeegeeing?
Gotcha.
You know, why we got the children?
Gotcha.
The children are on there because the mothers are saying, go out there and take care of my children. You know, bring some money home.
Yeah.
So these kids are using these children as substitute husbands and boyfriends because they don't want to go out. So we got to go deeper. And we have that subculture. We have a second group of African-American communities that are so dysfunctional that we close our eyes to the level of poverty that they live in.
Gotcha.
I know Dr. Kay said, she asked us a question, and she said, what areas do you want to classify a community? I said, well, first, poverty is a trauma. So because we don't talk about how bad poverty is, whether we're raised in it or we see it, we are affected so much by it is as a trauma. We don't want to address it. You have your talk show every day, see how many times people bring up poverty. And when on your talk show, you very seldom hear people bring it up because it's so painful to talk about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Donna, I appreciate you so much for checking in. Donna kicking us off real strong tonight to have this conversation. Look, I'm going to take a quick pause. When we come back, Lisa from Parkville, you are up next. Then we're going to talk to Candace. And then we also have our very special guest, Dr. Jasmine Abrams, joining us live in studio to give us some insight about this whole idea of the strong black woman. Is this a myth that we need to live up to? Can it be lived up to? Or is it time for us to challenge this and to get to a place of authenticity and self-help? We're going to have that conversation. Stay riding with us. Hit me up on your phone, on the phone lines at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. You tune into Forte Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back. Welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us here tonight. Oh, my goodness. I know this is going to be one of them conversations. I can feel it in my bones, Baltimore. This is going to be one of those conversations where we're going to have to dig deep. Some stuff is going to come out, but I'm so happy we got the good doctor here with us tonight to give us some context and some balance, because many of you, you know, I mean, as progressive in my thinking, I like to believe I am. I do not have all of the answers. I am not a doctor. When I asked Dr. Abrams, how would you like for me to refer to you? She was like, Dr. Abrams said, Dr. Abrams, I worked hard for that DR. You surely did. All right, Dr. Abrams, thank you so much for joining us here on For the Culture. How are you this evening?
I'm blessed, Faraji. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to have, we've been talking and kind of setting up a little bit about this conversation, but I want to get to my callers, and then I'm going to bring you into this discussion as we talk about this whole idea of the strong black woman. Is it time for us to continue to embrace this, or is it time for us to challenge it so we can get into a much healthier place, much more a place of authenticity, especially for you, sisters? 410-319-8888. Lisa from Parkville, what's your take?
This is a topic that needs to be discussed in depth, and because I'm one of those so-called strong black women.
Yes, ma'am.
Living the myth. And I'm standing here in my kitchen after working two jobs today, cooking dinner, and trying to think in my mind all the other things I need to do, I said, it's okay to say you need help. And that's so hard for sisters to do because, first of all, this topic goes back historically.
Right.
It comes way back when we were slaves through freedom, Reconstruction, Jim Crow. We know that the black woman had to carry the community from the time she was working in the fields or the big house all the way up to modern history. So there's a historical context there, first of all. Black women were the mammies and the nannies and the cooks and the cleaners. They had the civil rights movement on our backs, and we had to maintain our households. And then, of course, when the men left the households and the communities, it's all the single mothers that are raising the children.
Yeah.
But then there's a generational aspect of it as well, because I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and I saw my mother, even though we had a father in the house, she was a matriarch. She was able to hold it down. And I remember asking her, and I never saw my mother cry, ever.
You never saw, wait a minute, you said you never saw your mother cry.
I never saw my mother cry a day in her life, God rest her soul. And I remember asking her something years ago, and I said to her, did you ever have any regrets, Mom, about life? And she said, we all have regrets, but you just keep pushing through. That was her answer. And so when you grow up in a household where there's strong women, and you're not allowed to take those timeouts. I was never given permission to take a timeout. I was never given a permission to say, I can't handle it, I can't take it. That was the impression I always had growing up in the environment that I did. And so you pass that down, and I have a daughter who unfortunately has picked up these same habits that are, believe that she has to carry the world on her shoulder, that she has to make her mark professionally, that she has to be there for her family. And I remember just having a conversation with her about a week ago, and she said, sometimes I don't want to have to take care of everybody. Sometimes I want somebody to ask me, what do I need? And that's because she sees me and she sees other strong Black women trying to hold it down in the work world with our careers and our degrees and education and then coming home and running a household.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole historical generational aspect of it,
yeah.
But it really comes down to balance. I teach mental health first aid as an instructor, and I do know the fact that there's a large percentage of Black women that struggle with depression and anxiety, and that self-care is negligent in our community.
Right.
And you know what self-care is? If I ask some of my students or participants, what does self-care look like for you? The most they can say is watching television.
You're right. There it is.
That's not self-care. Self-care is mind, body,
and
soul,
spirit. Yep.
And really what it comes down to is saying, and you're talking about authenticity, is saying and being comfortable with saying, I'm tired.
There it is. There it is. Hey, listen, I gotta let you go. But you are speaking to my soul right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're speaking to my soul. I want to get Candace in, and then Dr. Abrams, we'd like to bring you in as well. Candace, what's your take on this, ma'am?
Hey, Faraji.
Hey.
I just wanted to say, you know, I'm a 48-year-old woman,
ma'am.
I remember a lot of arrogance around achievement, like in music, like promoting being independent. And
are you talking about that Neo song, Miss Independent?
Yes, exactly, yes. you know, raise your hand in the air if you can pay your rent.
Right.
And I used to remember saying, well, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Like, taking care of yourself became glorified. And I also think that we took away our men's right to lead in doing that.
Mm. Well, is it a fact of us taking? Is it a fact of taking away, or is it a fact of stepping up?
What, in terms of the men or the women?
The men.
The men stepping up. Yeah.
No. I'm saying women feeling like they have to step up and to fill in the gaps where the men left off, where the men, you know, were derelict in their duty.
Yes, I think so, but I might get a little slack on this, but I think we kind of played a role in that, falsely thinking that we didn't need them in the first place. We put out a lot of messages as women, like, hey, I'm independent, I got my own, I don't need you,
right.
I don't need no man, and I just remember over the years saying, please stop putting that out there, because the more we tell them we don't need them, then the less they're gonna start showing up, and that's what's happening.
Hey, Candace, here's the other side of that. Then the less that I think a lot of men are going to be willing to step into that role of being quote unquote the provider, being the one to open up the car door, being the one that really steps up, you know. And I mean, it's a double edged sword, you know what I mean? And again, it goes back to, we're at a point in our culture, in our community, where Black women, you do not want to be seen as weak. As the first, it started with Black men. But when a woman can't cry, a woman can't show her emotions, now we at a whole new level of what the heck?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. When a woman can't cry, a woman can't show her emotion. And yet, the other part of it, you often hear men say, well, women are emotional. But when a woman can't show her emotions, man, oh, man, that's foreign to me. That is absolutely foreign to me. So, Candace, I appreciate you. I got to let you go, but I thank you so much for checking in. Dr. Abrams, you've been hearing this. You did this study based upon all of these factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've been hearing about this forever. You've been hearing about this situation forever. First and foremost, talk a little about the study. What was the catalyst for you to do this study? And then what did you glean from it?
Yeah, sure. So I started this work in actually more broadly defined, looking at gender role beliefs of Black women.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a project that my mentor, Dr. Faye Belgrave from Virginia Commonwealth University, was leading. And this was, again, back in 2010 when I started. She was doing focus groups just trying to figure out, what does it mean for Black women to be a woman? What kind of roles and responsibilities are associated? What does it mean for women in terms of what they think men should be? What are their roles? What are their responsibilities? And in every group that we did, I think, 8 or 9 focus groups in the Central Virginia area. Every group that we did, before we could ask women, because we did have a question about what it means to be a strong Black woman, that was the last question, number 10. Before we got to that question, every single time when we asked people, what does it mean to be a woman? Well, as a strong Black woman, it means that I am X, Y, and Z. And so for me as a researcher, it became very clear that, okay, this is a role that's very important, that's very central to these women's lives. And when we started looking at the data, we saw this is a role that's allowing people to survive challenging circumstances in their personal life, but also in their broader societal context. So women started referencing things like slavery and referencing things like the Jim Crow era, referencing things like discrimination and oppression in current day experiences.
Mm.
And how being a strong Black woman has allowed them to keep their families together, to provide food and homes and different things for their children and be able to be a caregiver for their parents or siblings, et cetera. And so that's what became the impetus for the work. What I also noticed during the initial focus group discussions with women was that women were tired. Like our sister Lisa just said, I'm tired. And we sat women down free of, you know, expectations from their family members or friends or society. When we really got to peel back what was at the core of their existence, really, they said, I'm tired. I'm overwhelmed.
Mm.
You know, I like to be able to show up for my family members, for my friends. But at the same time, it's overwhelming.
So if it's overwhelming, is that burden, is that pressure coming from a Black woman's family, you know, if it's like, i.e. her spouse, is it coming from the children? Is it coming from the expectations that she may have for herself and that she's still trying to get to? Is it like, where is this burden? Or is it so historical that it's enraptured in our DNA, which I've heard that trauma can get so deep, it can get into our DNA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all of those things. When we started, again, looking at the data, we saw that it's coming from the family. It's coming from people on the job. It's coming from, like Candace just mentioned, all of these popular media outlets. Neo with the, you know, I love her because she got her own. Alicia Keys, I'm Superwoman. Destiny's Child, all the women who independent, throw your hand, you know,
right.
The, I can't, who was a Lil Webby, I-N-D-E.
Right.
It's nonstop.
Webby,
you know,
right,
these
right.
songs are constantly coming out on a regular basis. It's not just these songs. It's in books. It's in our television shows. It's in our movies. Anytime you see something with a Black woman represented, you are going to see elements of the strong Black woman.
Wow.
It is who we believe as a culture, as a society, not just Black culture, but general American culture. And I've heard other researchers in other countries doing this work as well. But definitely here in the United States, it is who we believe Black women to be. They're strong. They're unbreakable. They're supposed to be able to take it and get back up, not show emotion, keep pushing.
Right, right. 410-319-8888. We're talking to Dr. Jasmine Abrams. About this whole idea of the strong Black woman. Do you think it's time for us to continue to embrace this idea, or should we challenge it to get to a much healthier and much more authentic space? 410-319-8888. I also want to hear from the guys. You know, normally I hear guys all the time, Dr. Abrams, and tonight they're real quiet. They're real quiet. They're real quiet. You know what I'm saying? Because I think that just like one of our callers mentioned that, you know, I think guys play a huge role in perpetuating that, right? I was reading a piece, and we're going to talk about this because this myth actually permeates and spills over into, you know, one's choice for a mate in terms of their dating life. You know what I mean?
Okay, and Faraji. Okay. All right. I didn't know we was going there. What about a different set of notes?
Right.
Okay.
But, you know, it goes into your dating life and the fact that, you know, a lot of times men choose black women or refuse to choose black women because of this idea. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Cheryl in Baltimore. Cheryl, what's your take on this as we talk to Dr. Jasmine Abrams? Cheryl? All right, Cheryl, make sure you give us a call back. We'll just have a little.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, got you. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay. How are you both?
I'm good, good.
Well.
So you're good. I'm glad to hear that. Your first caller said she doesn't know, I think it was Donna, she didn't know where the where we were identified first as being the strong black woman. I believe, and I think your guest just mentioned it, that it could have come from slavery. We had children, and 24 hours or 48 hours later, we were back in the field picking cotton with the baby strapped on our back. So it's been demonstrated.
Yeah.
And because, now I'm talking about the black man, because he couldn't do anything if the master raped us, that took his power away. So because we kept getting up, black women, we had to put food on the table and do all the things that we had to do, he got comfortable, the black man.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any other black men to reference to say, well, this is how, this is what you do. This
that's
is how you become a man. He didn't have that demonstrated to him. So they've gotten comfortable. And yes, we as women have always had to pick up and do it all. And men have gotten comfortable. Not all men, but
say,
as a collective. As a collective, right, there are some.
Right, right, right.
You know, and that's because they had men that it was demonstrated. This is what you do. This is how you treat your woman and that kind of thing. So that's where it started.
Gotcha.
The power away from black men, and now the black men, they still don't have it. As a collective, we don't.
We don't. Right, right. And I think that, you know, Cheryl, I appreciate you mentioning that because I think that on the other side, women have this distorted view that has made them imbalanced, right? You know what I mean? If a woman says, I don't need no man, and I mean, like really coming and understanding what is that space, where is that coming from? Now, that could be, I'm not saying that every woman is made for a man. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that space of disdain and bitterness. I want to speak to that. All right, Dr. Abrams, don't be like that. I'm just trying to have a conversation.
I appreciate it.
You know what I'm saying? Because see, here's the crazy thing. Like, I've heard more younger women in their teenage years going into their 20s and 30s getting to a place of, I don't need them. I'm going to do me. And I'm like, how does that resonate with a 16-year-old, an 18-year-old?
So let me make a really important disclaimer.
Go ahead.
We are mostly talking about, when we start talking about black women in the context of relationships, I want to be clear that we're mostly talking about black women who are either heterosexually identified or bisexually identified that, you know, want to partner with men over the long term. Not to say that women of other sexual orientations don't identify with this construct. That would be an inaccurate statement. But just want to make sure that we're clear about who we're talking about. So we're mostly referring to heterosexual black women in this conversation. And with regard to the statement about this whole I don't need a man, you know, I'm a strong black woman and I don't need no man, that kind of stuff. This is what we are encouraging from all of these different outlets. When a young woman is growing up and being socialized in her home by a single mother, that's what she's seeing. She's seeing that she doesn't need a man. And especially, you know, in the context of, okay, this woman is handling everything. She's not crying. We just heard a caller say she's never heard, you know, seen her mother cry. She's not, you know, stressed out or overwhelmed by different problems that arise in her life.
this is what we're communicating in our day-to-day life experiences. We're also communicating it in these songs.
Right.
Right? We're communicating it on television. It's a sociocultural phenomenon that's being communicated to young Black women, to Black girls on a day-to-day basis that they don't need a man. And not to say there's anything wrong with not needing a man, but I think what is implicit in what you're saying is how then, if you have reached a space of I don't need a man, how do you actually partner with a man if that's your desire?
Right. Yeah. And okay, given the fact that every woman is not in a heterosexual relationship, mm-hmm. the whole idea that you don't need anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't need a partner. I can do this all on my own.
Right. No,
you know
yes.
what I'm saying? So now we're looking at a much different thinking that's apparent right now. I want to get back into the phone lines. Folks are checking in. Let's go to Renee. Renee, what's your take on this?
Man, I had to call in.
Yes, Renee. I know, because you know what, Renee? I know what's in your heart, Renee.
Okay. I had to because here's my situation. I'm stuck in traffic right now. I live 90 minutes from Baltimore. I came over here to Baltimore to take my dad, my 80-year-old dad, to the doctor. Mm. He's a widow. Lost my mom in this past year. I'll travel back to my home, and then I have a 14-year-old at home and a husband who's been out on he's not even getting disability. He's out on an injury, he's type 2 diabetic, for the last year. I work full-time, and now with the finances, also I work 7 days a week. I picked up a part-time job on the weekend. So I work every day.
Wow.
So when you, and I've been married for 15 years. When you talk about this being strong, sometimes it's just forced on us because what would be the option? If I didn't work this, we wouldn't have the money to be in a house. We'd be out on the street. We would, so do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and then coming to check on my dad who, has had health problems and stuff like that. And literally last week, there was just one day, I feel I'm a sound person, but if I could have checked myself in somewhere, I would have.
Mm.
That's how overwhelmed and tired I felt.
Mm.
So it's a lot. It's just a lot. I don't believe I'm a stereotype. I don't believe I have a cape. It's just these are the things that I do because I have to for
wow.
my family.
Right. So these are, what are you doing to not fall into a space where you get depressed or you start to experience some real mental health issues?
What I'll do, I'm very regimented about this. I get up the first in the family, so I get up at about 5 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And I come downstairs and I get on my knees and I pray to God first coming to for gratitude
yep.
that I do have my health
yep.
and to keep me in my as right of mind as I can be. And then I do a 5-minute meditation, and
that's
I'm very
start.
Stringent about that. I have to start my day off like that.
That's a good start. Now, what about your people? What about the individuals around you? Because I know mm-hmm. for Dr. Abrams, she mentioned that, you got to have a community that is going to be supportive. And I've been preparing for this discussion, that's one of the big places that is missing in the whole process, that women don't find the spaces to connect with other women of like minds that are not on some, all about the money, all about the accomplishments, but are really there to be supportive of the health and well-being of women. Do you have that right now?
Women have to be supportive of each other. We're all working hard. We have families. We're working and stuff. And I do, and especially with younger women, I have one at work, that's a case in point, where, she's got the younger children, have been there, done that. And I'll just offer advice about, hey, I just try to. And sometimes she's almost in tears because without telling me, honey, I've been through what you've been through. I know what
right.
you've been through.
Right.
And so yeah, we have to be better to each other. I did want to say the thing about I don't need a man. And no disrespect. Finding a good Black man, and when I say a good one, I'm going to define that, is very, very hard. A healthy male, Black men have a host of health problems.
Man, this is going to be a 7:30 conversation.
Finding one that may have been divorced or never been married and has multiple children, and with that, child support. And so you see what I'm saying? So when women sometimes say, I don't need a man, what it is, you don't need his hassle.
Oh, Renee?
As far as the financial things, so do you understand what I'm saying?
I hear you loud and clear. I'm going to have to let you go just because I want to make sure I get to all my callers. But
Renee,
I hear you.
Renee, you just preached, sis.
I know. I hear you. I do hear you that there is some. You're talking about baggage. You're talking about bringing that emotional and spiritual baggage. And this conversation, let me just say this. I think this conversation is much bigger than just the relationship space.
Mm-hmm.
I think this conversation speaks volumes about women finding themselves at a new space, at a different place where they can feel whole again.
Mm.
Because the demands and the forces of life will make you feel like Swiss cheese. Mm. It will just leave you wanting.
Mm.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We have Clark. Clark, what's your take on this? And then Darrell.
Yo. Hey, how are you, bro? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say, you know, it's a whole host of things. And what really made me call is something that you yourself said about being traumatized and carrying that trauma over, and does it get into the DNA?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a while, I've been listening to what some of the work of Dr. Joy DeGruy, and she speaks on just that topic of the post-traumatic slave disorder.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And how that trauma gets passed on, because at the end of it all in 1865, you know, we never heard of any of the programs and any of the help programs that help those traumatized former slaves get whole.
Right.
And any doctor of the day, or even I guess student of the psychology would tell you that to get whole, you need therapy of some sort.
Right.
And be it professional therapy or some, back to your comments of self-help therapy, but you need to admit and recognize and say, you know what, I need some downtime. I need to regroup all my thinking about all that stuff I've seen and heard. So it is a intergenerational problem that has gone on.
It's a real big, yeah, absolutely. And Clark, I appreciate you for checking in. Thank you so much. Here's the thing, and I think Clark brings up an excellent point in terms of, and I have a view about this. Like, if you are sick, you really do need to go to a source outside of yourself. If you are in need, if you are wanting, you need to go to a source outside of yourself in order to find some remedy so you can simply get clarity of mind about how to get back to a healthy space. I'm not saying that you need to spend millions of dollars on getting a therapist and just staying in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are in a dark space, Dr. Abrams, you know, when people be like, well, I'll just kind of work through this myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, nah. Like, for me, I mean, I'm just saying, it doesn't make sense to me that you try to work out through a situation, because otherwise you wouldn't have gotten there if you knew how to not be there.
Exactly. And I think to your point, so it's not just when you arrive at that space, it's before you arrive at that space so that you can try to prevent yourself, right, from even getting into a deep, dark space that somebody's going to have to try and drag you out of.
Right.
And to Renee's point, you know, she mentioned, I don't know how many jobs she just told us she worked, and she says she has children.
That's crazy.
Exactly. Sis is working hard. And then she also mentioned she's married. She's caring for her father, who's an older adult. This is every day for many Black women. It may not look the exact same for all of us, but in some way, shape, or form, many women are just going, 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 going until there's nothing left, right? And so to prevent us from even getting to that space of nothing left, we need to be making sure that we're focused on, like Renee mentioned, self-care before we arrive to the nothing left space.
See, here's the other part of it. I think that because the way life is, life has its ebbs and flows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are down periods in your life, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're working for someone else, you know, you're not always quote unquote busy. And here's what I would suggest, folks. Part of our culture is, and I had to get out of this and I had to learn the hard way, but part of it is we're not always that doggone busy. See, this whole culture of busyness, like, we always got to be busy. I'm always, oh, I can't, like, you. And then the first thing that somebody says, that when you, I don't have time for that.
I can agree in many ways with what you're saying, but I think sometimes that is a privilege. I want to say a male privilege. And also sometimes a privilege that doesn't come with being a black woman. Sometimes you literally don't have time for that.
Was I being sexist in saying that?
Well, Faraji, I didn't say that. Those were your words.
No, okay. No, I'm serious. No, look, here's the thing. And I get it. Trust me, I get it. We live in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
So Baltimore City, unfortunately, has a huge number of households that are ran by single women.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is that take time out for yourself. I think that in Baltimore, we have many families that, you know, there's a reason why a young girl can get pregnant, have children, and all of these things, and then she's able to have a support system, whether it's from the auntie or from the grandmother. But you got to take time. Like, I get it that these things will wear on you. I get it. But you know what? We make time for what's important.
I agree. 110%. We make time for what we want to make time for is what my mother says.
Right.
And I think to that end, we need to make sure we're building community that will allow us to facilitate taking time for self. One,
sure.
Prioritize it as a value. Two, build the community that's needed to be able to do so.
There it is. Look, we're going to continue the conversation because we got Derek, Kelsey, Darrell, Jay, and Cozy on the line. Just hold on. We're going to bring back more of this discussion as we talk to Dr. Jasmine Abrams, as we try to get to some understanding about this whole idea of the strong black woman. Is it time for us to challenge it, or should we continue to embrace it, even if it's at the detriment of our own authenticity and health?
Mm.
Continue to be a part of the conversation. Post your thoughts on my crazy Facebook. That is just going crazy. Also, post your comments on WEAA Facebook page, as well as give us a call, 410-319-8888. Stay riding with me, folks. Whole lot's coming up in the second hour of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back.